who's going to be the rainmaker when you're gone? Who are they going to, who are they going to love as much as they love you to give all those referrals to? Sometimes you might have maybe three or four customers that make up too big of a share of your revenue, or you might have employees who produce too much percentage-wise of, you know, if they walk out the door, the new buyer is sunk. So these are all areas, there's a lot of areas like that where you can look at what is risky to a buyer, not to you, but to a buyer, and get rid of those. That makes you much more attractive to any kind of buyer.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Dr. Ruth Manschreck. She's a dentist, a business strategist, and founder of Shoreline Strategies, LLC, in case you were wondering how she incorporated. She has over 30 years of experience in private practice. After a life-altering experience with her daughter's NICU stay, she reimagined her business. She reduced her hours while boosting revenue. So she might have a magic wand for all of us. This shift inspired her to develop a streamlined business model centered on efficient systems, high-performing teams, and a thriving company culture. Music to my ears. Now, through her transformative programs, Business Lifestyle by Design and Prep It to Sell, which I think people need to pay attention to, Dr. Ruth helps entrepreneurs build scalable businesses and unlock their full potential, ensuring they sell for maximum value when the time is right. Welcome to the show, Ruth.
Thank you. I have to tell you, this podcast is one that I listen to and I actually take notes. You have some great conversations, and I have taken notes and sent them to my team more than once. So good on you.
Good.
I'm excited
that,
to be
that
here.
Means I'm finding good guests like you, because it's not anything I'm saying. It's just you're like, hey, you found some smart people.
Yeah.
You, not so much, but the people you bring on,
no,
beautiful. But that's really kind. I'm happy to hear that you're finding value. So I'm excited for you to get to play that role. So tell me today, Ruth, what is on your mind?
Today, what I would say is, what I notice in some of my clients is that going through the motions of, let's say, professionals in private practice, for example, so chiropractors, veterinarians, attorneys, CPAs, dentists, we go through the motions of running our business, and we don't, it's a day-to-day trudge that to get through, and we don't always think of ourselves as leading our business as much as we think about how we have to run it. And making that shift, when we had to shift our business from 5 days down to 2.5 days, that was one of the pieces that I had to pick up that I wasn't doing previously, was being a great leader to my team. Sure, I was running it. I was telling them what to do. The old-fashioned version of leadership. And I learned long ago that I'm the leader because I know stuff. So in order to be a good follower, you just do exactly what I tell you. There's no there's no creativity required of my followers. I found out right away that that model doesn't work very long. And I love the fact that young people like have no patience for that type of leadership at all. I have four kids who are all millennials, and they couldn't care less what I know, that they are not interested in a leader who's going to tell them what to do. It's fabulous.
Right.
They are determined to use their creativity, and I love it. So that was one of, we made five big changes in our practice in order to scrunch it down. And leadership was one of the big ones. One of the big ones we
did. Gotcha. I love that. I joke because I'm on the elder side of being a millennial, although I've been told I was born in the wrong generation. Apparently I'm a little more Gen X than my fellow millennial children. But I joke and tell people that break my own rules to show myself who's boss. I have such a disregard for being told what to do that I don't even like it when I tell myself what to do. Something that just struck me, it's a different perspective on something I've talked about before, about how people mature from technicians to they understand the tactics around the techniques. And then at some point they should become, or you would hope they would become strategists. So they understand how all the tactics fit together. But when you're a professional, like a dentist, like a lawyer, like a chiropractor, you've not just like said, hey, I have a skill. Like I started my first company being a website designer and then added marketing. And those are things that I had natural ability. I didn't go to school for, though. I certainly did not make the size of investment that professional service provider has had to invest in order to be in business. What do you think makes it more difficult for professional service people like that to think of themselves as entrepreneur, business people, leaders? Is it the fact that they've invested so much time, effort, and money to be good at doing a thing or rendering their service that they're stuck in just being a really top performing technician? And they don't really see that if I want to do this, I've also got to do this other thing over here, which is run a business.
Exactly. And I'm sure someone told me when I was in dental school that you're going to have to run a practice. But I was so hyped up on how good I was as a practitioner that I gave it no credence at all. And it wasn't until you get out and you have to hire your first person or you have to fire your first person. It's like, this isn't fun, and it's not why I became a dentist. And my personal take on how to be a leader was to get my team to behave, to get along, to make sure they had me ready to go and cause no problems. That was, I thought if I managed all that, I was a leader.
Right.
I had no idea how far from the truth that was, but that's what worked. And the other thing I think that doesn't help us is that our colleagues don't truthfully talk about their businesses, their practices. When I go to convention and watch and talk to all the guys that I went to school with, none of them ever said, man, I'm just scraping by. I don't know if I'm going to make it. We never honestly had conversations about, this is really hard. Like, I don't like my assistant, but I don't know what to do with her. They make it sound so easy. And those that went before us, they don't talk about the hardships of it much at all. We think it's easy. They make it look easy to run a business, and it truly is not.
Right. It's sort of just go through the schooling, pass it, and if you do that, then people will come and you will make money and you will make a living.
Exactly. If I build it, they will come.
Yes. You'll eventually have Shoeless Joe walking out of the holy cornfield.
Yes.
What do you think, if for younger generations, as a Field of Dreams reference, and you can go look that up.
Yes.
But I'm curious why, because I not that I'm a professional in that sense, but coaches, consultants that I talk with, that the thing that I see stump them the most is basically the same problem, which is they may be really good in the session room. They may be really good in that one-on-one, that executive coaching, but it's the being the entrepreneur side that kicks their butt. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you feel like you've hit on what is the prevailing wisdom in that professional community that people are buying into that keeps them from talking about the hardship of the business of dentistry, the business of chiropractor, mm-hmm. the business of law.
Because for the longest time, we just can't believe that the fact that we are so skilled at what we do isn't enough to bring people to our door. Like so people should know, because I was at the top of my class, they should run to my office because I am that much better than the guy next door. But our patients don't know and they don't care. That's not what's top of mind. They're worried about, are you a nice person? Are you going to talk to me? Are you going to scold me because I didn't do a good job? They have all these fears. So speaking, how do we speak to our patients, our clients, our customers using their language? This is a whole foreign thing that no one ever teaches you how to market your own practice. And it's not about using my expert language and my expert knowledge. It's about understanding my client or my patient's fears and problems and speaking to that. But it took me years and years and years to figure that out. So that is a downside of our higher education. We're so focused on being just the perfect dentist or the perfect chiropractor that we forget about, now, how do I provide transformation to my patients? How do I get their attention? How do they know that I can solve their problem?
Right. Craft an experience around it, not just do a thing, but like the, like you were saying, how do they talk to me? Because I've talked with people and have friends and family members who the professional was plenty competent, but the way that they spoke to them or listened or dismissed. I've had a couple of come to Jesus meetings with a few highly educated professionals, but that my wife would go in for an appointment and we're trying to figure something out and she has these concerns and she's tried to educate herself so she can advocate for herself, which I think everyone should. But it was just dismissed out of hand, laughed at, and she left the appointment in tears, which is just unacceptable to me. I'm like, like, man, you're supposed to be this healer, this professional, this person of curiosity and science and trying to understand something and, okay, what really is needed here? So I think you bring up something really important is that there's all these things that influence your ability to do the thing you love, and that if you don't get it right, you may not get to do the thing you love, or at least not do it the way you wanted to for very long, which honestly is heartbreaking because I think entrepreneurship should be rewarded. I think it is a key to freedom for so many people. It creates jobs. It stimulates the economy. It takes care of families. It does a lot of good in our world, not just in our Western culture, but all throughout the globe. And when we're not honest about that hardship, because we've glamorized it at this point, I think you have like Entrepreneur Magazine and Fast Company and nothing. I'm not speaking ill of those publications, but they showcase the success stories a lot. It's a lot like what people say with social media is you're only seeing the highlight reel. You're not seeing the high rate of suicide amongst entrepreneurs. You're not seeing the high rate of depression and divorce and separation and anxiety and just the detriment it can take. Even if you're good at it, it can still take its toll, right?
Yeah, especially our industry, my industry, dentistry, has horrendous statistics about the suicide rate of our... We had a classmate commit suicide before we ever got out of dental school. And I have helped practitioners come up with a workaround. If you truly are not a social animal person and you have this amazing skill set of surgery, let's say, because I find physicians have the hardest time with this, to go ahead and say, you need to designate who's going to be the loving leader in your practice because your practice has to have a loving leader, even if it's not you.
Tough pill to swallow.
But it's better than alienating your entire team and have them all walk out the door.
Preach. You know, I know there's cases and they're eluding me right now, but I do have a friend. She was on the show. Why did I just blank on her name? But her first name's Tara. But she started her business. She was providing consulting services and built it up and was successful. But she found that she just so loved being a practitioner of the work. And she would do it. She was good at it, but it didn't energize her to run the business. And so not too long ago, I think, I forget the timeline, but she hired someone to basically be the CEO of her company. Now she's still the owner, but she said, look, I need somebody to be CEO, the loving leader. And I just want to work on my craft. And I want to do this. I only want to worry about how I've helped this end client. And if I provide a good service, well, then they're likely to refer me or keep buying from me or coming back as so much of it, like on the medical side, right? Like your dentist, you see him every, or should see him every 4 to 6 months, or a chiropractor. Like you don't, it's not like you're cracked and you're done. Like my wife had to go through like a 12-month program. And even then it was still like, hey, we've got to do some major things. And now we're just going to do some maintenance, like you're
a little tune-up.
Such as the human. Such as the human body. Right. Yeah. So what for you was that light bulb, that aha moment that, yes, I've I've done a lot of schooling. I've done very well there. I understand how to provide excellent dental care, health care, and answer all the questions with all the right ways. But that switch, was it did that happen before your daughter's NICU stay? And some of that, was that starting to come on and that was a confirmation, or did it just sort of like hit you all at once?
It was a total blindside. And I am one personally to overthink everything. I'm a little perfectionist. Actually, you want your dentist to be a lot perfectionist. And I had no time to think about it. When she was in the hospital for 6 weeks, she came home, she had to see 8 different doctors every week. And I was fully entrenched in my practice. It's not like I could set my practice down and say, sorry guys, I was just kidding. So we had to do this. So there was no time for overthinking it or second guessing myself. It was just go. We have to do this. We're going to start tomorrow, guys. And it wasn't, the best part was, it wasn't just me saying, okay, this is how we're going to do it, because that's my old leadership style coming through. But it was a team effort. I sat down with my team and said, these are the hard parameters I have. How can we make this work? So it was a good year of testing, trying things. And I encourage, it's like little steps that happened all at once very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, I could see it being, obviously it's never a good thing when a child has to go to the NICU and endure that. But whatever the pressure may be within a situation, sometimes forcing us to not overthink can be clarifying, right? Because I think that there's probably a lot of entrepreneurs, regardless of a background training or to what professional, or I don't want to say unprofessional, but there's all these distinctions, that you're probably doing it because you do think deeply about how something should be done. You have a vision, you're a visionary, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what starts all these businesses. But I think in any, would you agree that any strength when overdone becomes a weakness?
Absolutely. Anything that gives you tunnel vision, so that you're not, as the owner, looking at the big picture, can get in your way. I think the clarity that came with having the pressure of we have to do this today made us start with systems and say, okay, we need systems for like everything. And if your listeners want a place to start, that's the place to start, is to look at, I call it the client journey in your business from like the very first phone call. Who's responsible for that? How do they communicate that information? To the scheduling, to the service delivery, to the accounts receivable, all of that in a big system, because then you've got a starting ground. You've got a foundation for your team to work with. Then you have to learn communication. How that is like the biggest thing we learned was you can't just have a great system. Everybody, you develop silos when you get specialized. Too many silos. And silos on a farm, if you look at them, they only communicate up at the top. And in a small business, you need communication between your sales and your marketing and your service delivery to happen immediately all over the place. So that communication. Right. And then we discovered, okay, now we need the right team members to actually make all this work. The people we had were not fitting into the new structure.
Oh.
So we focused on, I call it the Henry Ford outlook on your team or hiring people. Henry Ford, as you might know, never even graduated from high school. His one skill was he was an expert at mechanics. He totally understood mechanics. It was like his lifeblood. And he created an empire by surrounding himself with experts in all the fields, all the areas of his business that he didn't know how to run. And I love that. I think that's why a leader can go down and say, I'm just going to be my expert self right here, and you guys take care of all the rest. But in order to do that, you have to have systems, you have to have communication, and you have to have a great culture to make it all work. And then you need a leader on top.
Yes, absolutely. I want to hit on that, but first there was a question. I've never thought about it this way, and I'd love your take. You talked about the strength, anything that creates tunnel vision and keeps you from the big picture is a negative. I mean, and I would agree. How would you delineate between tunnel vision and focus, right? Because focus is a bringing in to, like, I got to go a mile in one direction, not a millimeter in a thousand, right?
Right.
Being very diffused. How do you start to split the difference between when focus has moved into the realm of tunnel vision?
You can't do focus all the time. It's not like I'm only every day, all day long, going to focus on this one thing. Every now and then, some leader, some person in your business has to lift their head up and look forward, which is usually what the leader does. Say, my vision is out there. Are we still on track? And then you can put your head down and focus again. But somebody, whether it's the expert or an assigned person who's going to say, yep, we're going to look at the big picture. I have to see how my team's doing, how all the pieces to the puzzle are doing. Someone has to do that. I've always wanted it to be the owner, but the longer I coach, the longer I coach established physicians and attorneys, they're not giving up their focus. I said, you can do that 40 hours out of your 70-hour week, but you got to raise your head and look where you're going and take care of somebody does.
Gotcha. So it sounds like the difference would be like prolonged focus leads to tunnel vision as opposed to a more rhythmic focus.
Sure. That's a great way to put that. I like that. Rhythmic.
I'm about to take a note from you. How about that?
I like that. Yeah.
So, and then because I'm huge on focus, I feel like focus is a superpower of mine. And because I think you can plow deeply into a topic or an aspect of your business. Like right now, I'm working on some internal systems around AI. Like, how do I want to use it to extend myself and create a better client experience and make it consistent? Just all the things you're talking about. And then where do the humans that I've already been working with, like, where do they start to fit into that to where I getting them to do the things that only they can do? I think one of the toughest parts about the installing of systems, because I don't know a single person, business owner, practitioner, who would disagree with that sentiment. And Lord knows there's enough books out there. I even help people install systems. I have a whole framework on system and soul, and I got this other system for this and a system of that.
Right.
And my mentor actually has a whole framework around the system of systems. So we're just structuring and getting lots of scaffolding. But I think the problem that I've observed, and I'd be curious if your observations and experience line up with this or something different, is we don't know how to get what's in our head, and I would say even what's in our heart, out into that system. We agree we need systems, but so much of that is about systemizing your expectations, your own knowledge, your own thoughts, your own approach. Because if you're the owner, if you're the the leader, well, now you're trying to distill that into a unified, like, this is how we get to the vision. This is what the vision is. You got to be able to get that down and out for people to use and leverage and mix in with. That to me seems to be the tripping point, because I can get people to agree to systems, but then getting to execute on the plan that maybe we discussed becomes a different story, because they either they can't focus or reflect. What's been your experience with that, and maybe even your own experience in, because you like you said, you got blindsided. You'd spent years just with most of it in your head, command and control leadership. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to dictate what I need when I need it, but you may not see the whole picture. How do we start to, like, what, again, let's start with what your experience around that or what you've observed, whether in yourself or a client has been.
So great. First of all, let me back up. Most of the time when clients come to me in trouble, they're in trouble because they've done too much head down focused work without ever raising their head to see, how's the culture? How's my team doing? How are my clients being served? You know what I mean? They just have gone head down thinking they have to work harder to make their business bigger, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that lifting your head up, that's where things come into play. And what I find when I try to help people put systems in is that the owner then becomes a bottleneck, because it's very hard to set up a system and trust that it's, the end result is going to be as good as if you did it yourself. And that, so that boils down to, when you give someone creativity, which is a piece that AI doesn't do well, but if you give them creativity to do their best job for you, you have to paint a very vivid picture of what the outcome is. Because if you turn somebody loose, like if in my office, if I, it makes me nervous. If I had to tell somebody, I want you to sterilize this, if they do it wrong, someone could die in my office. So I trust is a hard thing for me, because I know how to do it. So for me to step back and say, go ahead, figure out how to do this the best way, I have to paint a really vivid picture of what the outcome has to be. Patient still has to be alive. All these bacteria have to be dead. Do you know what I mean? You have to paint a really clear picture and then turn them loose. Otherwise, you can just ask AI, and we don't need people in there. Some of the creativity, I think that's why people get bored at their jobs and disengage. I personally can't think of anything worse than sitting next to me all day long, sucking spit out of somebody's mouth. That's like boring. So how do I keep someone in that situation engaged? How do I give them opportunity to use their creativity to build relationships with my patients when I'm not there, to find ways to make it less of a boring job and more of an engagement in something they're contributing to the end result in my practice?
Gotcha. You're tying their effort to a positive outcome for the business, which gives them, people want to have purpose in their work.
Right.
They feel like they, what's it, the three essential things for humans? They need to be feel seen, feel heard, and feel like they matter. And that's what I feel like I hear you saying is part of being able to allow someone to utilize their creativity within reason.
The parameters that you give them.
Right. But then after that, it's like makes me always think of like bowling, right? Like you take your kids bowling, like you pull up the bumpers and have this now. Hey, however you, do you want to throw the bowling ball? Yeah. Do you want to set it on the ground, roll it? Do you want to push it down the dinosaur's mouth or whatever you want? Whatever you like, go ahead. But it needs to end up at the other end of this lane. And I think so many leaders are, I think it terrifies them on some level. And especially, I would say maybe in a medical or a legal situation, just because the stakes are higher, right? But because like when I'm designing a website, I used to remind my team members, I was like, look, we're not doing surgery. Nobody's going to die if we get a landing page wrong. We can edit and republish and the world will keep on spinning. Now, somebody may get ticked off because we did the wrong thing, but I was like, just like my wife says to my kids sometimes when they complain, it's like, but did you die?
But see, that's the leadership in you. That's a leader's responsibility, is to get to hold them in safety, in security, and say, give it your best, because you're right. The world's not going to end. We're going to get this. Set that insecurity, that fear that they have back. And honest, that's the part when my lack of leadership really was like right in front of my face, because I had been telling people what to do, thinking that that was me leading.
Can you talk a little bit more about that it being in front of your face? Because obviously we can hear the story of leading up and how you have led and then what that's produced now. And obviously now you've got successful programs to help other people, like you said, as a self or maximum value when the time is right, which I love that. But can you talk about your internal or inner state when you can't escape the reality of how you've been leading and the fact that it no longer works? And maybe talk to another leader who's listening to this, and maybe they have a sense, or maybe they're about to be blindsided. But What is that like in your inner world, your inner monologue, when you go, oh, shoot?
Yeah. Probably the best decision that I made when it comes to that is I just said, I cannot, because my team has seen me be this kind of a leader for so long, I can't just show up one day and say, okay, now I know how to be a perfect leader and this is how it goes. Transparency and collaboration is huge. Don't be silly. They know that yesterday you were like this and tomorrow you want to be something different. So just be collaborative about it. Work with them on this journey and say, I want to be supportive. I want to engage you. I want to make sure you succeed. I want to make sure the business succeeds. And I want to set it up so that if I get hit by a truck tomorrow and I'm not here, you guys can carry on. You might have to have a new doc in here, but the business is so well run by a team and a system and a culture that it will keep on going, and nobody in their right mind would tear it apart and sell it for pieces because it functions. Right. My goal with my clients is I want to hear them say, my business runs better without me.
Right, which I think that's a hit to the old ego.
Oh, yeah.
Is it not?
A lot. But see, with leadership comes actually caring about your team. And I have to own up to a horrible thing. When I sold my practice, as a leader, I failed my team. My team, I didn't keep track of what was going to happen to them. They were decimated. It was not what I was expecting because I wasn't prepared. I had no idea somebody would just say, you guys are gone. We don't need you anymore. Honest to God. So I like to keep people from ever having that huge failure in your heart. And it goes with making sure they are absolutely able to carry on without you, because then it's much more attractive to a buyer to keep it together, to not pull it apart and sell it for little pieces. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It's a cash flowing asset. Why would you?
Right.
Yeah. Why would you mess with it?
So it means you need a different kind of buyer and you need to be absolutely irresistible to that kind of a buyer.
Gotcha. Talk a little bit in the selling process as you're working with clients. You've talked about the systems for like getting the business ready to sell. Talk a little bit about getting the owner, the founder, ready to sell, because there's got to be a preparation in their heart head for that, because it's really hard to not say that I am the business and the business is me. I advocate for separating, but I say it with empathy because I will still on certain days, and especially now that this particular business bears my name on it.
I know.
And I'm really the only person in it. So I tell people, it's like, if they reject my marketing or my sales, they rejected me. And I go cry in a sock drawer. But talk about the balance and the focus on preparing the owner. And how would you split the ratio between preparing the business versus preparing the owner?
It's kind of it all goes together. You really can't separate it. You do need to do some things in order. And the very first thing is just what you said. Decide what's important to you. When do you want to leave? And I just got to say, the biggest mistake I see business owners make when they are trying to get ready to sell is that they wait too long to start the preparation process. It's a process. There are things you need to get in order, and it doesn't happen overnight. But the first thing for the owner is to figure out, what are you going to do next? Because there's nothing worse than a professional out there with nothing to do but twiddle his thumbs. Figure out what you're going to do next. What are your non-negotiables? Like, are you good with the golden handcuffs? Like, they're going to say, we'll buy your practice. We want you to stay here for 5 years. Are you good with any? Like, 1 year, 3 years? Figure out what you want. Do you have to have a certain price for your business? Just, you got to figure those things out. Because when you step into the room with a potential buyer, you want to have great clarity about what you're selling, and you want to have extreme confidence that what you are selling is worth that price.
Right. So it sounds like kind of the classic Stephen Covey, begin with the end in mind,
yes.
Like work backwards.
Yep. And simple things. Like you want to increase the value of your business as much as possible. And it's more than just, it's not just a big revenue number. When a broker works on selling your practice or your business, it's more like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You're trying to match up a source of funding or a buyer to match up with the exact skills and revenue and all of those pieces. So it's not just, only the big guys get sold. No, a lot of little guys get sold if they're attractive to the right kind of a buyer.
Right. It's really no different than any sort of sales. And it goes back to what you were talking about is like with your clients, understand their needs. Mm-hmm. What is important to them? What are their fears? What are their hopes?
Exactly.
And then building your practice that way. And the service delivery is, I hear you saying, think about your ideal buyer for your mm-hmm. business
exactly.
and start building those pieces in so they're foundational. That would, like you said, make you irresistible
sure.
to that ideal buyer, and which would also give you great confidence that you're like, mm-hmm. I'm good with how this got built. This is the kind of person or organization
right.
that I would want to purchase this because I think they'll do right by
uh-huh.
you know
It'll
like
be
whatever
a good
your legacy
match.
Is.
Yep.
Yeah, good match.
The other thing to keep there's like three more things. One is to decrease the risk because every purchase. Transaction has risk somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I encourage people to look like if you have the owner are the rainmaker, if you're the name brand, if you're the community face, who's gonna be the rainmaker when you're gone? Who are they gonna love as much as they love you to give all those referrals to? Sometimes you might have a customer or maybe three or four customers that make up too big of a share of your revenue comes from a limited
right.
number, or you might have employees who produce too much percentage-wise of, you know, if they walk out the door, the new buyer is sunk. So these are
right.
all areas, there's a lot of areas like that where you can look at what is risky to a buyer, not to you, but to a buyer, and get
right.
rid of those. That makes you much
yeah.
more attractive to any kind of a buyer. The other thing
right,
is, oh, go ahead.
No, keep going.
The other thing is to think about competitive advantage. Like if there are two dental offices right next to each other that are for sale, why is my practice better than the one next door? If we are equal and all our metrics, why should somebody buy my practice as opposed to the guy next door? So
mm-hmm.
It means you need to get to know your competition. You need to get to know your demographics. And you need to know what does your community think of you? How does
mm-hmm.
your community talk about you? How do your employees talk about you? What makes you different than anybody else?
Right. Differentiation, positioning.
Exactly.
That's
the marketing for it. Right.
Right. It's... Sounds like you do a lot of the same things you would in acquiring customers, but you're just applying it to a different audience.
Sure.
And some of what you have to do, like you said, is it may not feel risky to you, or you may be able to
mm-hmm.
tolerate that risk as the owner, but I screw up this saying all the time, but I heard someone say, it's like, don't sell with your own wallet or something like that. Like basically don't think about what you would buy.
Right.
And what you could tolerate
mm-hmm.
in terms of what you're selling is think about what they would be willing to buy
exactly.
and what's important to them.
What's it worth?
Right. So, because I know that there's services and stuff I've come across and or things I've thought about doing. It's like, I would never pay this amount of money. I'd just figure it out and do this thing. And then I'll have a friend thump me on the head and go, yeah, but
mm-hmm.
not everybody knows this or knows how to do this thing. And what could save somebody 2 years of time, that's
right.
that's worth this price you think is too high. And I'm like, oh, well, like when I started selling websites, there was an agency I worked for briefly. They sold websites starting at $5,000. I thought they were insane. Like maybe they had a drug problem. But turns out they weren't insane at all because by the time I was done and selling my practice or my agency, I wouldn't do anything for less than 5,000. I was like, okay. No, like that's absolutely where I need to be. But again, I was trying to sell to someone and buy with my own wallet, what I would buy. I was like, well, yeah, I know how to build a website, so I wouldn't pay $5,000 to get someone to build it. Mm-hmm. So, well, Ruth, I feel like there's a great many things we could keep talking about and we'd probably have a lot of fun with. And so I'm feeling a part two in our future.
Good. Yes. Great.
And what I'd love to know is in thinking, we've been talking about thinking about the audience and what they need. Well, let's think about our audience been listening to us here today and somebody's listening and probably an owner and they're like, I might sell, I might not. But either way, I hear what Ruth is saying about how I can improve this for myself now and maybe in the future. Mm-hmm. By your own admission, didn't do everything all at once when you had sort of the pressure. I wouldn't call it an epiphany because it was like pressure induced. You weren't like just in the forest journaling and an apple hit you on the head and suddenly you saw a vision. But you didn't do this overnight either. What's the baby step someone could take in the next 24 hours spending little to no money to make progress towards this sort of like program says, business lifestyle by design?
Right. It's to really start with your systems. And I would say a conversation with your team because they have a perspective on what you do in your business that's completely different than yours. So I would never encourage a business owner to launch into one of these conversations on their own. I don't want to give business owners more work to do. They have a team, they're skilled, they can help. We do have some resources for your listeners. If they're interested in, like, how do I think about getting my business ready to sell, we have a checklist that they can go through. If they go to prepitnow.com, there's a free resource there they can use. It's a great place to get started about, like, how do I think about this? And how do I have these conversations with my team?
Okay. Gotcha. And we'll make sure that is linked up. Cool. So just thinking about the conversation that you need to have the conversation, but start thinking through it, be thoughtful before you enter into it is the recommendation.
And pick the brains of your team, especially if you have a middle management in there. Mm-hmm. That's a great place to start with. We have a wonderful thing. How can we make it better? What can we do to move forward from where we are?
I love that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dr. Ruth, see, I snuck one in there at the end. I'm going to bookend it with the doctor. But thank you so much for spending some time with me and the listeners and sharing your wisdom. I'm sure it's going to touch some people. You've given me some things to think about and even some things to think about for clients that have been really helpful. So I really appreciate that. If people want to know more about you besides the Prep It Now worksheet, where can people connect with you? Maybe reach out if they have some questions or maybe want to know more about like how you're helping folks.
Sure. Our website is shorelinestrategies.com. I'm on LinkedIn. And if they're interested in the idea of working fewer hours in their business, we also have resources for that one, and the website is workfewerhours.com.
That's incredible. Those two URLs, and like Shoreline Strategies, that's your business name, but those other ones, I was like, either you snatched those up quick,
I did,
or you paid $13 billion to acquire them. So I've been looking at some domain names for something I'm working on, and I'm looking, I'm like, it's like, maybe I should just change my whole idea if I can.
I decided it has to have like three words only. Yeah. And we just kept working and working and working them.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners. You spent some time with us. I don't take that for granted. Neither does Ruth. We hope that you were both entertained and educated throughout this process and throughout this conversation and that you got a nugget of something that helps you take your next step in leadership. To that end, I would appreciate a like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on your platform of choice. Also, most of these platforms have a way that you can leave a comment or some feedback or a review. I'd love to hear from you. What topics are you looking for? What would help you? Are you thinking about selling your practice? And we need to have the Ruths of the world on here more often, or do we need to do a full mini series with Ruth? What are you looking for? Because I have fun doing this, but I I want it always, just as Ruth and I were talking about, it has to add value to you and meet you where you are at and help you take that next step. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.